So I bought this tiny little Canon G7X, and then I did a couple of videos just to test it out before we went, and I uploaded them to YouTube, and they performed like over 100% better than any of the videos that we published that year. I was like, what gives? Like, what's, I don't get it. Like, I've got the editors doing their thing. I've got fancy lights. I've got DSLRs, and I'm shooting this thing on a point and shoot. And it's getting more views than the DSLRs are. I just leaned into it, and then just something clicked. I was like, oh, this is the mistake that I've been making, that I've been thinking that quality content means good quality editing and fancy lights. That isn't the case.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schramko here. Welcome back to superfastbusiness.com. Today, chatting with a super awesome man, Scott Devine from scottsbasslessons.com. Welcome.
Hello, hello. How you doing, James?
Now, I've caught you at home today. You're not in the studio, so there's probably going to be family sounds, and that's the great thing about the kind of job that you've created for yourself. How do you find the balance between working at home and going off to a little studio and basically in charge of your own routine?
How do I find the balance? Wow. It fluctuates. So sometimes I find it really easy. Sometimes I find it more challenging. And I think that it depends on what you like as a person. Some people may need something super structured. I think that I'm in between. So I do like structure in my day. I generally try to work set hours and make sure that I'm maximizing the hours that I've got. And sometimes, yeah, sometimes I have crazy kids running into my life and, and all that. I've got like 2 kids, 3 and 5. In fact, if anybody can hear any sort of like clicking sounds, it's my 5-year-old sitting next to me doing Transformers. So
but that isn't that the best thing? My kid's in another room, they're playing a game right now, and just being around, like I've been around him since he was 5 at home, like the last decade I've worked from home. I imagine as a musician that's something that is more common in your industry. But how is it to bring a stable income to your industry as well, where you actually get to do the stuff you love and get paid a consistent income from it and have that flexibility? It must be quite a unique situation.
Yeah. It's mind blowing, really, in terms of like, this wasn't ever the plan. I didn't ever think that this was the plan. My plan was to just be a bass player for the rest of my life. And then, one thing led to another, and I ended up doing this that I'm doing now. We can talk about more of what I do for anybody that hasn't heard of me or anything like that. I'm assuming most of your audience won't have heard of me because they're probably not bass players. But in terms of like the family, yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. It's just like I have to pinch myself all the time and just think, what's going on? This wasn't supposed to happen. Like, I'm glad it did, but
We're definitely going to talk about how that happened. So just for context, scottsbasslessons.com is a site where you have educated over 30,000 people on how to play the bass guitar and associated topics around that. You've got a YouTube channel with over 562,000 subscribers, and it's some of the coolest stuff. I don't know anything about bass guitar, and I am so drawn to your content. I love, as soon as you click on it, you start hearing this funky music. You make the videos fun and entertaining. I think this is definitely one of your strengths. Yeah. And I'm not going to ask you how good a bass player you are, because the people who I've mentioned your name to, they all say, oh, Scott absolutely rips. He's actually a really good player. So you get good cred in the industry.
Yeah. Like, I think that that is probably one of the most important pieces of the puzzle. I think that it's really, really easy for all that are trying to create products and solutions and solve problems online for other people to focus on the tactics. But the overlying, I wouldn't have been able to get this to where it is today if I didn't have my, my shit together. Like, it wouldn't have happened. So it was all of the hours put in beforehand, getting my craft really down and really nailing that and putting the hours in there, that has helped me do what I've done afterwards. It's, so I can copy whoever I want, but if my foundational skills aren't together in terms of whatever I'm trying to teach, big problem.
I just did a case study presentation at a online marketing event, and it was case studying Silver Circle members who, you know, were happy for me to mention what they're up to. And one of my points was, if you happen to be the best in the world at it, that's a great starting point, because the marketing stuff, you can get help with that. But the people who market things that aren't that good are going to suffer against a bad offer. And I imagine you get quite a lot of groundswell off pure reputation and the quality of the training there. I'd love to talk a bit about that. You said you didn't start out to have this. How did you get to this point? Because I'm sure someone listening to this, they might be pretty good at something, but it's pretty common that they're in the foundational stage. They might be considering a membership. Mm. They might already have a membership, and they're just wondering, can they do it without 562,000 subscribers? What was that little journey for? If you were to put it in just a few sentences, we don't need the long version, just the short version.
Yeah. Okay. So what I'll do, I'll just circle back and just mention two things, and then I'm going to answer your question. So just on what you were talking about in terms of being the best in the world or something, like, I'm definitely not the best in the world at bass playing, because I don't think there really is a best at anything. There's like different styles, but you can absolutely be in the top 5% of what you do. Like, let's talk about surfing. I'm sure that there's, you know, some people that are really great at a couple of different skills. And then there's somebody else who's a completely different style. They're in their top 5% at that thing. Same as like skateboarding. Tony Hawk's great at one thing, but somebody else will be better at something else. So it's about, how do you get in the top 5% of what you do? And then the secondary thing that I didn't mention is that you've got to be amazing at teaching that thing. Like, your communication is like the most important thing that you can work on. So listen to other people that are fantastic at communicating. Let's talk about internet gurus. You know, there's no huge Jeff Walkers or, you know, Frank Kearns and Brendan Burchards and those guys back in the day. Yeah, they were like internet gurus or whatever you want to label them, but they're all really, really fantastic, as are you, James, at communicating. Like, that piece there is the missing piece of, like, that so many people forget about, is the actual communication piece. So, yeah, I think that's also like super important. But in terms of like how I got to where I am right now, in terms of, you know, running a membership platform, I was a bass player full time. It's all I ever did from, you know, forever, you know, from when I was a kid. I was dropped out of school before the end, the end. But I dropped out of school before the end, before the exams. Started making basses, actually, because I was, you know, into woodwork and those types of geeky things. Started making, got an apprenticeship making basses. Saw other people playing basses, and I thought, I might be able to do that. And was the whole, that world of being a professional musician was kind of opened up to me, because I came from a town of, like, I don't know, you know, a few thousand people. I didn't even know that you could be a professional musician. Decided that I wanted to do that, went down that route. And then I did that for, and it was clunky as well. You know, I couldn't get into music college because I didn't have any qualifications, because I left school too early. So I had to just kind of wing it and, you know, hustle my way to be able to become a professional musician. Did that up until the, like, late 20s, and then I got a movement disorder, a neurological movement disorder called focal dystonia, which basically cut my career, you know, well, it just cut it off, basically. It was like, okay, you know, I can remember being at the neurologist, and he was like, what else can you do? And I was like, oh, shit, I only do this one thing. This, you know, I don't do anything else. I can only play. So I was told to take 6 months off, took 6 months off, and in that time, I figured out that I could play guitar or play bass for around 10 to 20 minutes without any symptoms kicking in. And I thought, well, if I can do that, I should try and teach, because, and I was desperate at this point, like super desperate. I even created a website at one point about dog walking. I was like, okay, I like dogs. I could be a dog walker, that, because I didn't have any money. I was completely reliant on my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife. And yeah, so... And how I got into the whole website thing is really clunky as well, because I only bought my first computer 8 years ago. I'm a complete technophobe. That wasn't my schooling at all. I think there was, for anybody that's, I'm like 40 years old now, so I was just before computing came into schooling. And if anybody's 40 or a little bit older out there, they might be able to remember where you had one computer in the classroom and everybody used to crowd around the computer. And I've got no idea what they were talking about. I was just at the back of the class misbehaving. But but yeah, so, you know, like, I figured out I could play 10 to 20 minutes a day. And I thought, well, I might be able to teach. And by doing that, I might be able to get some money into the household, might be able to, you know, earn a little bit, because I wasn't earning anything at the time. And I thought, well, I could do one-to-one lessons on Skype. You know, I'd figured out, the guy I was living with at the time, my roommate, he was like, oh, there's this thing called the internet. I know this sounds exaggerated. This really isn't. This is how it happened. There's a thing called the internet. He took me to the local internet cafe because we didn't have any internet in the house, and sat me down. He said, this is this thing called YouTube. And I was like, whoa, this is amazing. And I geeked out, you know, looking at all the past concerts and things that all the artists that I'd been listening to as a kid, like Van Halen and stuff like that. I think I used to just sit there and watch Van Halen for like an hour at a time in this internet cafe. But I figured that I looked on this thing that I discovered called YouTube in that internet cafe and thought, well, if I'm going to be teaching and possibly using this thing called Skype to teach, maybe I could put some lessons up on YouTube. People will be able to find me, and I'll put my contact details or a link underneath the YouTube video. They'll find the website that I didn't know, and I didn't have a website. I didn't know how to make one. They might be able to contact me, and then, you know, and I'll do some Skype lessons. And then that's how it started. That was the whole birth of it. So I bought a computer and went on YouTube and wrote how to build website. And spend, oh God, even saying this is so painful because it's such a long time. I can remember, yeah, trying to figure out like how to install WordPress. Oh, like for me, who's never owned a computer, it was like trying to do a Rubik's Cube, you know, it was insanely hard. And then I can remember trying to embed a video. I didn't even know what the word embed was. So I was like searching things on Google, like how to put video in website. I mean, like it was so basic. And I can remember that day that I tried to do that. It took me about 8 hours to try and figure out how to actually get a video onto your website, you know, and now it's history.
Wow. Yeah, I can totally relate to that struggle of trying to build a website. I remember it took me from Friday night to wee into the hours of Sunday night to install my first WordPress install. It was an entire weekend job. And then I had to go back to my Monday to Friday,
yeah,
or Monday to Saturday, as it was, general manager role. So, wow. So
I'm still the same now. I'm still the same now. Like when I'm talking to a developer, I start it with this kind of thing. Okay, so tell me what's going on, but bear in mind, I don't know how to use my iPhone. So talk to me like you're talking to a five-year-old, and then we're on the same page.
It's good. I think the encouraging thing is that you have learnt to find out who can help you, and you don't get too bogged down in that stuff now. You do have a little bit of a team around you now because you have a substantial-sized business. You've got help with development. You've got people in there doing certain roles. What are the things that you focus on? I know you spend some time in front of the camera, and I know you still work quite hard in the business, and there's nothing wrong with that, especially if it's bringing smiles to your face. And you know, I see you unbox these bass guitars that you get sent, and you are like a kid at Christmas on Christmas Day. You love it, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely love it. Yes, I have got a team, and that's changing a little bit at the minute, and we should definitely talk about that because I've got some tips in terms of like building a team and all the mistakes that I've made, because I think that I can say this coming straight out of the gate that I've made all the mistakes I've done. You know, I've got a custom website instead of a WordPress website. Well, that opened up a whole heap of issues, and you know, I've started building the team from the ground up instead of hiring top down. And I didn't even know what this meant, you know, hiring top down. Like, what does that even mean? I do now. And we can definitely talk about that. But in terms of like I love making the content, and moving forward, it's what I'm really going to be focusing on a lot more, because I think that that's my unique ability. Why not do more of that, right? That's what's going to get people through the door and into the membership platform. Let's do more of that and focus on the stuff that I'm really good at. In terms of team stuff, like up until now, and I started just to give people sort of like an idea of timeline, I think that I was 2 or 3 years in. So I've been running this thing about 7 or 8 years now. I was like 2 or 3 years in before I made my first hire. And that hire was somebody to help out with customer support. And then that went on from there and became, I hired a community manager. And then I had another community manager, and then I had somebody to help out with tech, and then it kind of grew until, and you know, and it was very much, I didn't really understand what I was doing, so I was just kind of plugging the holes. Now, I've definitely learned the hard way and hired wrong people and hired right people and everything in between, but what I would say is that over the last few months, I've hired a project manager, and anybody that's may have got into this, you know, building a business online, you will come across some people that start talking about, hey, get a project manager, get a project manager. And all I can say is get a project manager. It really, really helps. And in terms of getting a project manager, I have got my first proper project manager 8 years in. I hired my first proper project manager like maybe 6 weeks, 7 weeks ago. And my entire life has changed in that time. And it's because she has done this before. So she understands, like, you as a business owner shouldn't be really thinking about, like, and it does help to be able to think about how to build a team and how to structure that team and how to keep the team accountable and how to get them to report to you and that whole thing, which is it's a skill set in itself. And you are actually an absolute ninja at that, James. And I've watched a ton of your trainings on that. You're going to get to a point where you probably don't want all the people to be coming to you and reporting and that whole thing. So when that, you know, when that time comes, a project manager is going to be, they'll be reporting to. And what's really great is if you get a project manager who has built teams before, because then you don't really need to worry about it. They can be like, okay, we need to hire in this area because of X, Y, and Z. And you can be like, yeah, great. What's the finances looking like? Yeah, we can do that. And they can figure that. And that's what she's, you know, bringing to the whole team. And she's been looking at our internal project management tools. And she's like, okay, this bit's working great. This bit isn't. Let's change that completely. Here's why we need to do it. And then I'm going to, or she's going to, then she will train the team on how to use it. And then she will keep people accountable. And like all of that stuff is really, I find it really hard. And she's just taken that completely off my chest, which is just an amazing, it's been an amazing experience. It is tough at the same time, seeing that happening and having things taken away from me. Oh, my little, he's just getting another transformer, guys. He's off.
Good on him.
He's giving me the thumbs up. He says, I'm just getting another transformer. But yeah, it was tough having that initially, having that taken off me. Not tough as in, it wasn't like emotionally tough. It was just kind of scary. I was like, wow, this is it. And even now, even 2 months into this, it's pretty scary because she is a fighter pilot in every sense, you know, in every way. She's like on it 100% of the time. And it's just great to see that happening within my team and me not having to be part of it.
Yeah, I saw this graph about flow, and on one side it has a circle saying discipline and the other side it has one saying surrender, and flow is the part that overlaps.
Yeah.
And a huge part of being able to just hurtle into that success zone is just letting go of the stuff that we tend to hang on to from when we started.
Yeah.
You've got to shed those activities to free you up to move on to the next. It's a metaphor of swinging from one vine to another.
Yeah, you can't, absolutely, yeah.
You can't get the next vine unless you let go of the one you're hanging on to. Like, if God help us, if Scott's doing the WordPress site and answering the support tickets and making the videos, it's just so far you can go until you run out of time.
Yeah, and that's what I was doing before. You know, that's what we all do. We all have to do.
I think we all do. Yeah. When you talked about content, you're making content. I know that you put a lot of effort into your premium content, your masterclasses, your behind the paywall membership content.
Yeah.
You go to fantastic studios. You have amazing artists you collaborate with. That must be fun. And then on the free content side, I know you're driving a lot of traffic with your YouTube. You shared a couple of tips with our group in Silver Circle about what sort of changes you'd made with your YouTube video marketing approach. I wonder if a couple of those might be shareable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think that's something you're a master at.
Yeah, okay. So YouTube is a channel in itself. And I think that when people talk about marketing channels, it's absolutely cool for people to think of YouTube as a marketing channel. But I do think that if the YouTube audience, and they're really, just to back up a bit, do you know when, like, you'll have heard people like say, like, for instance, like Gary Vee saying, hey, you've got to treat each channel as its own channel. Facebook's its own channel, Instagram's its own channel, YouTube's its own channel. And you've got to get really good at figuring out what the audience on that specific channel want. That's like really important. And I think on YouTube specifically, and it has changed over the last 8 years, I've seen like incredible changes in the way that the audience consumes content on YouTube, and also how the algorithm works on YouTube has changed a lot as well. So with that in mind, if the audience audience don't think that what you are doing is authentic on YouTube, and they sniff that you are using it as a marketing channel to drive business and that whole thing, that's cool, but it will have an effect on how well your YouTube does in general. I can give you two great examples. So Casey Neistat, who's a vlogger, has got, I think he's got like over 10 million subscribers right now. There's a photographer called Peter McKinnon. If you check out them two channels, there are actually businesses on the back end of those, and they've got millions of subscribers. But it's just pure authenticity when you watch those guys. They keep the plugs of their businesses, like, really, they do it jokily, or they have, it's an undercurrent, right? It's not this sort of like huge CTA at the back end of the, you know, do this, go to our website and do X, Y, Z and stuff like that. So I think in the short term, it does hurt you a little bit, but in the long term, it helps you really grow a YouTube audience. You know, they're in it with you. They see that you're in it for them. Like, a lot of my YouTube videos, I actually kind of reminded myself of this the other day, because I'm like super tuned into my YouTube videos. I'm like, no, why are we dropping some views here? Why, what, you know, looking back 6 months, you know, why are we getting sort of like 100,000 views on all our videos? What, now we're only getting 60,000 views. What are we doing? What am I doing specifically to not gel with our YouTube audience well enough? And something I noticed that when I was doing this is, a lot of my, when we were booming on YouTube, and we're doing pretty well right now, but we were doing really well 6 months ago. A lot of the time I actually started the video off and said, hey, YouTubers, what's up today? And that's, those guys are like, he's in it for us. You know, I'm not repurposing content on there. Like, I am to a certain extent, some of it, but, you know, I'm here. Hey, YouTubers, I'm here with you guys today. And I'm being really authentic. And that audience can feel that. So, and obviously this depends on if people want YouTube to be their channel, you know, and it is our channel. It might not be for everybody, but I think in terms of, it depends on if you're teaching something that's really visual, and like musical instruments, it's visual. So it's a really fantastic channel for that. So, and to even lean more into this authenticity thing, like what we were doing in 2017 is we did a lot of, as anybody would, the business was growing, we had more revenue, we're buying DSLR cameras, we're buying lights, we're making all the videos look super sexy. Oh, it's fantastic. The audience are going to love us even more. And the opposite happened. They were like, this is getting corporate. It's super polished. I liked seeing behind the scenes. I liked it when it was rough and he was in this sort of like his home bedroom, his like spare bedroom, you know. And then I bought a cheap camera, and I found this out by accident, actually. I should say that I bought a cheap camera, a Canon G7X, if anybody's geeking out on what to use out there, which we all are, right? So Canon G7.
Every single listener here, they're already Googling it. They're absolute yeah. hardware geeks. I've got one in my drawer here exactly, that I bought, right, because you told me about this. I'm like, I'm getting one of those cameras. And with all the short videos that I'm doing, I often mostly don't have a call to action in them. And they are just shot on an iPhone, and I'm taking my Canon away when I go to the Maldives. I loved hearing about this, how low tech, and I sold off all my lights and boom mics and all the rest of it.
Yeah, you know, so this is exactly
such a big lesson.
The story goes. Sit round, children. The story goes. I was about to go to New York, and I wanted to vlog about it when I was out in New York and capture some of the material that we're filming out there, because we were doing it for the platform. We'd hired a studio, and we were going to do a ton of courses out there. Before I went, I was going to take a big chunky DSLR and film myself. And I just thought, this is way too big. I'm like a real introvert. I find it hard to film myself anyway. I don't want to be stood there with this massive DSLR. I want something really, like, you know, I don't know, that I'm not going to feel embarrassed to get out and just talk into, okay? Because that's the thing for me. I am an introvert. So I bought this tiny little Canon G7X. And then I did a couple of videos just to test it out before we went. And I uploaded them to YouTube. And they performed like over 100% better than any of the videos that we published that year. I was like, what gives? Like, I don't get it. Like, you know, I've got the editors doing their thing. I've got fancy lights. I've got DSLRs. And I'm shooting this thing on a point and shoot. It's getting more views than the DSLRs are. I just leaned into it. And then just something clicked. I was like, oh, this is the mistake that I've been making. That I've been thinking that quality content means good quality editing and fancy lights. That isn't the case. Good quality content is like you can be sitting in a pub with your mate and he can drop a knowledge bomb, you know, and he could be, you know, half cut and have a bit of pint down his top. It doesn't mean that it's not good quality. So you can make good quality content, but also make it authentic and make the audience feel like you're in it for them and you're their mate and you're hanging out there. And that's what the YouTube audience, in terms of our audience, really resonated with. And the views on our videos went just like we'd like 200-300%. In fact, in 18 months, we added more subscribers on YouTube to the past like 5 years. So more subscribers in a year and a half than all of the other time that I've been on YouTube, simply because I went to a cheap ass point and shoot camera and realized that I needed to be authentic. And it wasn't about, you know, it wasn't about fancy lights. It wasn't about fancy cameras. It was just about hanging out with the guys and making them feel like I was in it for them. And I am in it for them. It's not like I'm not a charlatan. I'm not sort of like doing a switch and bait. You know, I am in it for them. Like I'm in masterminds. I was in a mastermind last night talking to some friends and they were asking, do you get fed up of doing this? Because they know like I put a lot of work into these. You know, do you still love it? And I'm like, yeah, I absolutely love it. It's a challenge. It's something that is really challenging because it's actually more challenging than making just a video where you sit down with fancy lights and fancy cameras and just shoot this lesson. Because a vlog style lesson, you need a narrative that is pulling the video together. You also need to teach within the narrative. Like it's complex. So even though I'm using a G7X and it's a point and shoot, the actual work on the back end of it is way more than a DSLR camera with fancy lights. That's the tricky thing, that it's actually way more. Like one of my videos that I did recently, it was 2 days. It took me 2 full days to edit it. And it was done all on a G7X. 2 full days, like 9 to 5, hours and hours. Now, the upside is that it got 250,000 views in like, you know, a month and a half. That's the difference.
That's really the key point. And, you know, fantastic content is chatting to a guy sitting in his super dry t-shirt somewhere in the UK while his kid's playing Transformers on the floor nearby. Yeah. Because what you just shared there, it's just so profound. And unless it's not obvious, I just want to point this out. I love how you look at the data. You care about the analytics and you want to refine and improve the product. And you understand how important storytelling is because it makes it easier for your audience to learn and to be engaged.
Absolutely, like
yeah. I love watching your videos and I don't know how to play the bass guitar, but that may change over time if I watch enough of these videos.
Get in it, man. Get in it.
They're just so exciting.
On that storytelling thing, I've got to obviously give credit where credit's due to where I got that spark from. It was really from, and I know loads of people, like he's like top of mind for a lot of people at the minute because he's doing some great work, but Gary Vaynerchuk, I think that he uses this term of document instead of creating, right? Document, don't create. Now, it's subjective to what you're doing, right? And I think if I was just documenting all the time on YouTube, hey, we're just in New York filming this course, then we're over here filming another course, I think we have to bake in education with that. So I'm finding a balance of that. So I'm documenting, that's the narrative throughout the content. And then at the same time, I'm also educating as well. So for instance, when I was starting to get into this style of video making, I would start the video off with a vloggy style section to the video. And it would be very much, I'm in the studio with X artist. We're doing this. It's, you know, and documenting what we're doing, documenting what the educational platform that we're building. And then that would transition into a lesson where I'd be sat down with the bass and I'd deliver. What I found is like that does work and it serves the purpose of documenting what we're doing. We're educating the audience about the product we're building. Instead of saying buy, 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 we're saying, hey, this is really cool. We're building this thing and you guys tuning in every week are helping us build this so they feel part of it. But you can also mix it up where it's the narrative runs throughout the entire video and you're teaching in those gaps as well. Like, and that's hard. It's hard.
Yeah, that's such a great tip. You know, I want to mention episode 241 on Superfast Business because that episode was called 10 Steps for Creating Powerful Selling Documentaries. And this was in 2013. So, you know, some time back, this is 5 years ago, we were talking about how important it is. And I do think this is the way of the future. I love this idea of documenting, and it explains why these behind the scenes videos are so popular.
Absolutely.
Now, I know I could talk to you for a million years, and I've been working with you for quite some time now, which it's such a joy to always, you know, discover what you're up to. You know, we genuinely have some amazing chats, and I'm super conscious of your time. So I just want to go through a couple of quick things that I think, you know, I'm aware of that I think would be great to share, but just the short answers here. Favorite traffic source?
YouTube.
I thought that might be the case.
Even though it's not, like, my analytics guys, like, you know, they kind of hate YouTube because it's just so wide, isn't it? You don't know if somebody's watched a video and then in 3 days they go direct to your site. You know?
I think that it's, like you said, it's a long-haul strategy. It's the same for the podcasts for me. I've been doing them for long enough that it's not uncommon for someone to say they've been listening to hundreds of hours of my podcast before they come on. Like, it might take 5 years, but it'll happen eventually.
Exactly that, yeah.
What are you selling? What's your favorite thing to sell?
My favorite thing to sell, and the easiest thing to sell, is one product. So my thing, you know, because it is what it is. It's just, and I think that there is a case sometimes of having multiple products. Obviously, if there's a chain of products, so you move somebody into one and then up the chain, that's a different thing. But yeah, all my marketing focuses on one product, which is a membership platform.
And you're on a recurring situation?
Yeah, we just moved to a monthly, actually. Like, we were on annual only. We're on monthly as well now. It's going cool. Is it moving the needle? I'm not sure. We're still waiting for the true numbers to present themselves. But yeah, it's going good. It's definitely not, we're not in a situation where we're panicking and going straight back to annual only. But I would say that annual only, like, we were annual only for like 7 years and it worked really well. Like, we crushed it.
Okay. Now, someone says, okay, you put your products into your membership, you're selling the one thing. What else can you sell once you've sold that? Just some ideas.
Okay, so once you're in the membership, so we've had some experimentation with physical products, which went really well, and we did sort of like an open and close on that, you know, like limited amount, and we sold, man, like 3,000, 4,000 bass straps off the back of that in like 18 months, which was fun, and they were like over $100. What I would say is selling physical products that anybody's going to get into this, my experience is it's really different from digital products. So obviously the profit margins are very different, but even down to the way that people buy them, like if you opening and closing, for people that haven't heard of it, you know, those sort of like the PLF, product launch formula, Jeff Walker style thing, you know, you open, you get a big burst of sales, and then at the end, you get a big burst of sales. I've not seen that ever happen with me on physical products. I do not know why. You normally get a huge amount of people up front buying, and then it kind of just tails off. And you'll get a small bump at the end, but nothing like digital products where you will double your sales on that last day, generally. Yeah, what else? So coaching, we've been experimenting with coaching, selling a $500 a month program, which sounds crazy. Obviously, it sounds crazy to me as well. That went like better than expected. We had 15 spots available and we sold 25 in 3 minutes. And then had to get another coach. So yeah, high ticket coaching, $500 a month on a 12-week program. And then we're going to experiment taking that into more of a continuity thing. What else have I done? Like one-off courses.
Masterclasses, yeah. Courses.
Yeah, masterclasses, sort of like one-off. So, and that's always hard. Like, I'm figuring that out at the minute, how to differentiate what's inside the membership and what's outside the membership. In hindsight, I wish I'd had that mapped out a little easier or a little better going into it. But now I think I'm kind of solidifying what that looks like. And really, it's just helping the audience differentiate between the two different types of content. So maybe inside the membership, you've got courses that are 40 minutes to, you know, 90 minutes long, whereas these sort of like in-depth big masterclasses would be like 8 to 10 hours long. You can sit those on the outside of the membership. You can give members a slight discount and then you can sell at full price to the public. They tend to do really well. And selling one-off products like that is always easier to a certain extent. extent because you're selling one solution, and a membership platform is not one solution. It's sort of like a whole, you know, we do courses, we do live streams, we do this, we do that. And it's a bit messy sometimes to be able to sell it, which is why some people use tripwires and things like that to get people into the membership, which I, if anybody's wondering, I haven't really experimented with tripwires at all. It's definitely on the list. I've got a lot of stuff on the list.
There's a lot on the list, and looking forward to going through those. I know there's so much we could ask, so much we could share, but you have given away some real nuggets there, especially the approach to having a successful channel on YouTube. It's obvious how much you care about your customers and how much you love what you do. And I just want to say on behalf of the listener of this show, thank you for coming along and sharing. You didn't have to do this. It's not your market. There's really nothing in it for you. I'm sure your subscriber count will go up. I encourage you, please go and join Scott's Space Lessons on YouTube, because it's a masterclass in how to do great content. And it's really entertaining whether you play the bass guitar or not. Scott, thanks so much. You're an absolute legend.
Oh, man, thanks for having me. And obviously, everybody listening to this, you know, go check out, you know, check out old Shrampco. He's on it. He's got this. Can I talk a little bit about what I've learned from you? Because obviously I hooked up with you how many months ago? Like a year ago or something like that?
It has been. And it's one of the calls I look forward to so much because it's so interesting. And it's such an example of a non-business coaching, non-make-money market. It just shows the potential when you love something. But if there are some lessons that we've, or some things that we've tried or done that got great results, it'd be wonderful to share that for sure.
Yeah, well, there's tons of stuff that we've tried, like the monthly thing, I think, came from you, or the bravery to do it. And actually, but let me back up. Like, I think that what that you bring me is just the ability to, do you know, like sometimes you just need a mate to be just like, stop mucking around and just do it. Just get on with it. And then if it doesn't work, I mean, it's not the end of the day. We can sort of like figure it out. That's what it's brought to me. You know, I could talk about tactics and we've tried this and we've tried the other, but it ultimately comes down to just give it a bash. And then if it doesn't work, it's fine. And like one of the big things for me was team. So like the team, that really came from you, just saying that, you know, you're too busy. And I'm like, oh yeah, no shit, Sherlock. Yeah, but sometimes you need somebody to be like, you're too busy, you need to do something about it. And it's the accountability of somebody that's been there and done it and isn't afraid to sort of like put that pressure on. But that's what I've got from this relationship. Other stuff as well, but that's the main thing.
No, that's wonderful. And it's often we have a fair degree of confidence because we've seen it work in a dozen other situations. So we get to cross-pollinate best practice from our peer group. But thank you for saying that. And I look forward to seeing the feedback from this episode. It's actually one of my favorites to have recorded because it's just really interesting. Very interesting. Thank you.
Awesome, man. Awesome, James. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
All right. ScottSpaceLessons.com. Check it out. Give Scott a shout out if you heard him on this episode and you liked it. He really deserves a lot of praise for that.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.